This is the High Stakes Lowdown, a RotoViz podcast brought to you by the Fantasy Football Players Championship. I'm Eric Balkman from the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour and the FFPC. You can follow me on Twitter at Eric Balkman and the FFPC on Twitter at FFPC. Today I'm speaking with BipLab Mandel, a winner of more than $15,000 in his High Stakes Fantasy Football career. He currently sits in 24th place in the Football Guys Players Championship, a contest that will award a $250,000 grand prize next week, and he's also in third place in the FFPC Terminator Tournament that features a $10,000 grand prize. Mandel is one of 12 teams left in the 2017 Scott Fish Bowl as well. He shares with us his zero RB love, his rules for starts and sits, and much more. You can follow Mandel on Twitter at __Rainmaker. Also, to kick things off in this podcast, we'll hear 2016 FFPC main event co-champion Nelson Sousa giving his thoughts on the championship week backfields in Green Bay and Baltimore. You can follow Sousa on Twitter at the_franchise12. Before we get into the show, I want to remind everyone that you can get a listeners-only 30% discount to a RotoViz NFL pass through the NFL podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast. Your subscription gives you unlimited access to all of the RotoViz content and tools, and it supports the podcast channel as well. Now, without further ado, let's check in with the champ, Nelson Sousa. Nelson, for anyone looking to take advantage of Blake Bortles' recent hot streak going into championship week, the choices are Dede Westbrook, Keelan Cole with Marquise Lee, maybe not even playing in that game. Has either of these guys, Westbrook or Cole, earned the right to be a second flex spot in FFPC starting lineups this weekend?
Yeah, I think up until last week, Westbrook was the guy that I thought was getting, a lot of looks in the passing game. He was getting the most targets the last few weeks. And then for whatever reason, last week, Cole and Mickens were the guys that got all the production, and Westbrook was kind of an afterthought. But I still like Westbrook this week. And then Cole is probably a guy that you could, as a desperation play. But I think Westbrook's the solid guy.
Packers have made the decision to replace Aaron Rodgers on IR again. And that means Brett Hundley will be the man behind the controls for the Packers offense. And what that means is that we'll probably see a lot more of the running game that we saw the previous few weeks before the Carolina game. We saw a lot of Jamal Williams. Obviously, Aaron Jones had that walk-off touchdown as he was recovering from his sprained PCL injury. So you look at Jones getting a lot more snaps in the Carolina game. Does it make both he and Jamal Williams no better than rolls of the dice, given the fact that they're going up against a very, very tough defense, and I believe they're almost double-digit underdogs? Or is there more here? I mean, is there something with Jones? Is there something with Williams? What's your read on this situation?
Yeah, both guys are unstartable. It's a bad matchup to begin with, and it looks like Jones is starting to eat into some of Williams' production. So those guys, you just can't play any of them.
Rex Burkhead is more than likely going to miss the final two games of the regular season for the New England Patriots, which is going to open up some snaps in the backfield. Are you firing anyone else up in your lineup this week besides Deion Lewis? Does Mike Gillisley get any love? Does James White get back into relevance? Or is this simply Lewis's show and everybody else is just simply too risky?
No, I think Lewis is a locked-in guy that you can use as your running back or in a flex spot for sure. And that I think James White is a guy that also that you could possibly put in there, and you can expect probably 10 to 12 points. But Lewis is definitely the guy with the higher upside.
The Seahawks are licking their wounds after they were demolished by Todd Gurley and the Los Angeles Rams this past week. Now the Seahawks face Ezekiel Elliott back in the lineup for the Dallas Cowboys. Does this make not only Elliott, but Dak Prescott and Dez Bryant must plays as well considering that they did their most the most damage they did for fantasy came when Elliott was in the lineup. Are Prescott and Bryant must plug-ins now in championship week?
I think Zeke is definitely a guy that you can plug in to the lineup. Dak is a guy probably that I definitely don't trust.
I think about where we were at this point last year. You guys were leading the main event and ready to close out on it. And here we are a year later. What are you guys hoping for this coming week? What are you rooting for? I mean, is there a repeat possible? Football guys, how are you guys doing there? What's the update there on this year-long journey it's been?
Yeah, no, unfortunately, just the way things have worked out, we don't have any teams up there that are going to have a shot at an overall, unfortunately. So, kind of a season that looked like we had a few teams that had a shot, and then it just so happened, we owned a lot of Funchess last week. Owned, we played Westbrook. Just the way things worked out, we own a lot of Russell Wilson, Jimmy Graham. So that really didn't work out too well. So those teams just kind of fell to the back.
It's really a testament to how hard this grind is and how long of a season this is. You think about where we were in July and August and September drafting these teams, and it the season flew by, but it seems like it was ages ago when you guys are putting this rosters together. But like I said, it's a testament to how difficult it is to win an overall title like you guys did in the FFPC main event. And I know may not be in the cards to repeat this year, but you guys are definitely talented enough that you're going to be a force to be reckoned with, and nobody's going to want to see you in their league again next year for sure. So best of luck this weekend. I hope the ball bounces your way. And I really appreciate you coming on all season and sharing this story and this journey with us here on the RotoViz High Stakes Lowdown. Best of luck to you this weekend, Nelson. We'll talk again soon, man.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Thanks to Nelson Sousa for his input this week. Now here's $15,000 high stakes winner Biplab Mandel. So tell the listeners, when you're not playing high stakes fantasy football, what are you doing for a living, Biplab?
Yes, Balki. So I work as a global IT director. My company implements CRM and ERP solutions all across the world, and I manage a global delivery and consulting team that does those implementations.
You manage a consulting team, and you also manage a lot of fantasy football teams to success too. Which one's more successful, your day-to-day or your fantasy football teams?
Well, I think my day-to-day is most successful.
Yeah.
But, I think fantasy football complements me pretty well because I started it more as a stress buster, and then last few years I got more serious because I noticed that I am fairly successful in this.
Yeah.
But it still is a great stress buster for me.
Yeah, what's great too is like, and I think you and I kind of touched on this in our emails, like it's so much fun to play, but then if you actually have a team in contention, which you got a couple for some serious money, this stress buster turns into a stressful situation these last couple weeks of the season.
I know.
It's just one of those things, I want to talk about one of these teams that you have floating around the top of the Football Guys Players Championship leaderboard right now. You actually drafted this for the RotoViz listeners that don't know. On my other show, the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour, we broadcast a Football Guys Players Championship mid-stakes draft every August live, and you were one of the participants in there this year. Tell us what you thought of this team's ability to be a really special team that could go deep into this competition after you looked at the board upon the draft's completion.
Great question, Balki. So just to give you a background, I'm a firm believer of the zero RB concept at FFPC. And I was even more firmer this year because the running back draft class was super deep. However, the only exception I had to this policy this year was that if I had a top two pick, I was going to take either David Johnson or Le'Veon Bell. And apparently, in this draft, I had the second overall pick. So I went with Bell, who was available. Then my strategy was, to load up with WRs or come right back into the zero RB concept. And that's what I did. Got a usable tight end and then touched players like Kareem Hunt and others in later round. Once the draft was over, I was pretty optimistic about this team because, Spencer Ware went down, and straight away I knew I had Kareem Hunt to complement with Le'Veon Bell. And then I had good four PPR volume receivers. Edelman got hurt, but I still had players like Landry and Doug Baldwin, and I knew they could take me deep. And then at that time, I also thought players like Corey Davis, Perryman, and Josh Gordon could come into play later in the season, right? And then I had Engram and ASJ to complement my TEs, and both ended up outperforming their ADPs. However, to be honest with you, at that stage, it is very difficult to predict how the final 3 weeks of the competition will go because many teams will look alike, many teams will have those Kamaras and Jamal Williams and Kareem Hunts, that will end up being differentiators. I actually started believing in this team when I noticed that I went 10-1 in this league, and I think my only loss came against the great Henry Muto.
Right.
So that's where I started believing in it, Balky. And then in week 14, this team rewarded me with a good performance. I didn't have a very good week 15, but I'm still hanging in there and hoping, I can turn around things in week 16.
Yeah, anything can happen. I was just looking at the Football Guys Players Championship from last year. I looked at what we had going into the final week, and you had Mike Kuzma, who ended up winning the competition, wasn't even in the top 40. I mean, he wasn't anywhere close to the top of the leaderboard, and then he puts up a 231 in week 16 and wins the 250 grand. So anything can happen. Let me follow up that question as far as zero RB goes, because I for the this is almost embarrassing to say, especially the fact that there's I host a podcast on RotoViz. I finally did the legit actual, in the truest sense of the word, zero RB for the first time ever this past year. And honestly, it was my best team that I drafted all season was the one I really want to, go heavy into zero RB, throw myself into it into 2018, and see what happens. But I'm kind of with you on if I have this, if I end up getting like an early pick, like a top two, top three pick. There's going to be guys there like, the comeback of David Johnson, Todd Gurley, Ezekiel Elliott, Le'Veon Bell, all these guys, even Alvin Kamara to a certain extent. All these guys at the top of the leaderboard are going to look pretty tantalizing. As we look to 2018, are you still believing in that same philosophy that you'll do zero RB, but not if you have one of those early round picks?
Yeah, great question, Balki. I think I will still focus on zero RB. To be honest with you, I will still go Antonio Brown after David Johnson and Le'Veon Bell next year. I'm pretty sure about it. Cannot find a more consistent, safe guy than Antonio Brown. So I would do that. I am not an Ezekiel Elliott fan. God knows what he's going to do next. So I'll try to stay away from him. But absolutely, Todd Gurley and Alvin Kamara will be in consideration. The other thing I also want to look at is where the running backs land next year, the rookies. Because when you do zero RB, it is very important that later you are able to land upside running backs also and just not grab any random guy available, right? So
Right.
that is where some of those rookies become very important if they are getting into starting roles because you'll start getting them in eighth round, ninth round, and so on and so forth, right?
Yeah, a lot.
So
I was going to say, a perfect example of that this year, Alvin Kamara and Kareem Hunt, dependent upon when you draft. If you didn't wait till the last minute to draft, you could add easily both those guys on your team as your third and fourth running backs.
Yep. And then you always, running backs get hurt more than receivers. And then you'll always find people like Jamal Williams and Kenyon Drake available on the waivers, and you just go and grab them.
Let's talk about you talked about this briefly in your team rundown here on this squad. Hunter Henry is the guy that you grabbed in the sixth round of this draft, and then you actually hit on two young tight ends, a rookie amongst them, ASJ and Evan Ingram, a little bit later on. Is it your philosophy that if you don't get an elite top tier tight end, is this strategy the best way to attack the position in the FFPC? In other words, are you if you don't get an elite guy, try to get one in like the sixth, seventh round so you don't get shut out of the position entirely, and then go for some upside in the double digit rounds?
Yep. Nice question, Balki. Yes, if I'm unable to get Gronk early, I really prefer waiting for tight ends because, I'm not a fan of investing a very high pick on a tight end that may not get a ton of volume. And, some of the consistent guys like Olsen and Walker are also getting older, so you never know when they get hurt. So my philosophy again has been grab four solid receivers in top five rounds, get a good running back with upside, a legit RB1 or, an upper end RB2, and then maybe between ninth to 12th tight end, start getting one in the sixth or seventh round. Like, there are leagues where I've even gotten Witten a little later, and he's very serviceable. Or, I prefer managing the tight end position through waivers. Then in some leagues, I also went very late and went with the combination of Cameron Brate and, Howard. Just grab both of them and see which of them goes away, right? The 1.5 PPR on tight end is very good at FFPC, but I also feel it can be a trap. And why I say it can be a trap is because not always the tight ends will have consistent games, that they are good for the draft master format. But in a classic, I would rather have a WR or a wide receiver with, 4 or 5 catch average than try to nail a tight end. So I'm very comfortable with grabbing a tight end in sixth, seventh round and then load them up with some upside players. Again, last year the tight end class was deep. Ingram had a solid outing at Combine. I had my eyes on him. And then ASJ was looking awesome at preseason. Now those are preseason hypes, but at that stage, 14th, 15th round, just grab them and hope for the upside. So they both worked out for me and outperformed their ADPs.
Yeah, and you have great depth on this team. I mean, just up and down. I look at what you had last week on your bench: Latavius Murray, who had a pretty good game; Robbie Anderson, obviously, who's been big for everyone down the stretch here; and then Evan Ingram, a guy who really is bucking the whole trend of rookie tight ends struggling their first year in the league. Are any of those guys going to make their way into your lineup in championship week? Or do you just, I mean, is your team so loaded that there's just not a spot for any of those three?
Yep. No, I think Hunter Henry has now gone to IR, so Ingram will come and straight away replace him. And then, unfortunately, in week 15, I had this agonizing decision of playing Hunter Henry or playing Evan Ingram. And then I looked at the top 20, 30 ranked teams, and since I was ahead, I went with Henry because most had Henry, and I thought I can consolidate my position there, because if he busts, everyone busts. But more importantly, I wanted to play also the reverse Henry combination, going for the upside there. Unfortunately, that strategy didn't work out very well. Kansas City got burned by Jared Cook a week early, but Hunter Henry couldn't do much, and Antonio Gates ended up with a touchdown in that game. Latavius Murray is someone, who I almost started him last week over Jamal Williams, but then with Rodgers back and Williams was getting all the volume, I thought he'll get some goal line carries and score a touchdown, and unfortunately that didn't work out. This week, I will probably have to come up with a decision between Murray and Jamal Williams as we get closer to the Packers-Vikings game. A part of the decision will also be who offers me more upside and helps me, shoot for a top 10, top 5 finish. Murray might be a safer floor, but Williams might have an upside again playing with Brett Hundley. Anderson is not a consideration with Josh McCown out. You know, I think his value went down when Josh McCown went down. So that's my thought. Sanu didn't do much last week, so I'm probably not going to play him and hope Doug Baldwin turns around and, you know, has a big game, which he's due right now.
Yeah, definitely. And it, with the exception of last week, Baldwin has definitely been playing very, very well down the stretch. So we talked about this earlier, Viplad, the stress that, you know, a lot of people are going through right now with being at the top of the leaderboard, not wanting to make a wrong decision as far as lineups go. What's really been the hardest part for you? Are you one of these guys who is going to agonize over these start decisions all week and then just finally on, you know, Sunday morning or Saturday afternoon, whatever it is, finally make up your mind and stick with that decision? Or have you already made up your mind and nothing's changing? Like what's the most difficult part for you?
Yep.
In this time where, you know, there's so much money on the line in week 16.
Exactly, Balki. I wished I was a computer and didn't have a human heart and human brain, right? So that makes it hard. You know, the hardest part is watching points on your bench and starts like Julio and AJ Green doing nothing and Antonio Brown going down, you know, in a championship week. But then we have all learned, right, that that happens every year and you probably get mentally more stronger with passing time. I have made some rules and I try sticking by the rules. For example, I don't like benching studs. I would rather go down with them. And I don't like floating around, you know, by benching studs. For example, last week I still played DeAndre Hopkins against Jaguars, even though it was a very bad matchup and playing with a third string quarterback, right? So those are types of things that goes into my decision making. Obviously, in a championship like FPC, I will also review some of the top 20-50 lineups. And you know, I have my own spreadsheet and try to run my own little algorithm, which may be all wrong, but just try to figure out who gives me the more statistical advantage. But more or less, I would say 80% of my squads are set. One or two players I might tweak around. Obviously, more research goes around this time, but people have to understand even analysts are humans and they cannot predict the future. They can only say what the data says. And unfortunately, every game is different. So that's where I am, Balki, right now.
There's a lot of people who are at the position of being on the cusp of you know, some life-changing money, and they're not going to have Antonio Brown at their disposal this week, you know, because of the injury last week. So if you were handicapping this and you're looking this from a fantasy standpoint, obviously this is going to depend upon who your other options are at flex and receiver. But when you look at the type of day that Martavis Bryant might have, the type of day that Juju Smith-Schuster might have when they go down to Houston to face the Texans, what are you expecting from both of those players?
Yep. I think Juju is an absolute must start next week. I do believe he will finish as a top 10 receiver by the time week 16 ends. He's explosive. You got a glimpse of what he just did to the Patriots with that one touch he got in the end. And I think he's the eventual successor of Antonio Brown in that team. I will say my bold prediction here that I wouldn't be surprised if Juju scores 30 plus points against this porous Texan defense and wins some players and teams big money, right? I will even play Juju over players like Des Bryant or a floor guy like Demaryius Thomas. You know, I'll probably start Juju over them. Bryant, I'm not too excited. You know, he didn't do much after AB exited, although he had a touchdown. If I am in a tournament or a dynasty playoff and I am behind, say, 40-50 points, I might play Bryant as that wild card Hail Mary player. But I would rather play players like Sterling Shepard or Mike Wallace over Martavis Bryant. But I am all in the Juju board this week. I think he's going to have a big game.
Yeah, he could be winning championships for people this weekend. There's a lot of shrewd owners that picked him up Well, earlier in the season, I mean, and when Bryant was still kind of, running ahead of him, and they've been reaping the rewards of Juju since then. A guy who really had his breakout performance of 2017, and it came in, the third last week of the NFL season, was Greg Olsen, and it really changed the way that we're kind of thinking about the Panthers' offense now in Championship Week. I'm wondering, was this just a coincidence that the fact that he crushed it against the Packers, that Devin Funchess also had a very bad game? I mean, was there some correlation there, between Olsen's big game and Funchess's bad game? And what do you do with Funchess now against Tampa in Championship Week in your lineup?
Yep. I think so. Olsen, I don't know if you agree with that, but Olsen finally looked healthy to me in the last game. He hadn't looked the old Olsen the previous glimpses I got of him this year. So Olsen and Newton, they go way back whenever Olsen is healthy. And I think, whenever Olsen is healthy, he is the number one pass catcher for Newton. That he's proved it last few years. And I also felt watching that game that the Panthers really wanted to establish Christian McCaffrey. He kept getting tons of touches and tons of passes early in the game, and I know that hurt Funchess to an extent. Now, that being said, the Tampa defense is porous, although they played well against Atlanta last game. But it is really hard to bench Funchess, when you look at that upside. I would probably keep him as a wide receiver two or three consideration and really pray that he gets a touchdown. Because in an offense like Panthers, you are not going to get 8, 9, 10 catches, right? So those touchdowns can help. But again, I would rather play someone like Juju or Robert Woods or even Josh Gordon over Funchess this week, because I feel Greg Olsen is the number one target, and then Christian McCaffrey is going to get 5, 6 passes.
I'm totally with you, man. I think Funchess might have just dropped down to third on that offense as far as expected targets now with, and I agree with you. I think this is really the game that Olsen looked healthy and right, and certainly for dynasty owners who are trying to squeeze a couple more seasons out of Greg Olsen, I think that warmed their heart to see that performance last week. Marquise Goodwin, BiffLab, he has just crushed it for everyone who's been playing him the last few weeks. It gives me a little bit of pause though for the leagues I own him in, facing Jalen Ramsey in Week 16. Now this is a guy that who was going to be covering DeAndre Hopkins last week, and you obviously. Based on your own rules, you're going to play Hopkins against him, and Hopkins came through. But certainly Goodwin, not on the same talent level that Hopkins is, but he does have the better quarterback right now. So you look at Goodwin, what are you doing with him this week? Is he still a startable guy?
Yep. Excuse me. To be honest with you, I'm not touching any 49ers receivers against the Jaguars. If I have Goodwin, he surely would have been a waiver pick for me, and so I would rather review and look at who are my other options. Of course, in a tournament, if I'm behind 40, 50 points, I might use him as a contra play because many may not start him. If you look at the last game, Hopkins just had 4 catches and he scored the touchdown that saved a lot of us. But, I don't think Goodwin will have a big game. A desperation play for me would be someone like Kendrick Bourne, maybe on that team, getting some dinks and dunks here and there. But otherwise, Goodwin will be on my bench. I'm more excited to see how Jimmy Garoppolo does in this game. That will prove really that is he being set up for greatness. That is what I'll be more excited and watching in this game against a talented Jaguars secondary.
I was so ticked off too because Garoppolo's been obviously playing very well the last couple of weeks, and I checked the leagues that I had picked him up in this season. None of them were dynasty leagues; they're all redraft leagues, and it just totally ticked me off that I won't have this guy going forward because he looks awesome. But that, yes, that will be interesting to see how he does against that Jacksonville defense. Another question that fantasy owners have to answer this weekend is, they want to play a Ravens running back against that Colts defense that just looked awful against the Denver Broncos on last Thursday night. Is it Alex Collins? Is it Buck Allen, who actually was the better Week 15 play between the two? You still have Danny Woodhead there. I don't know if anybody wants to play him with everything on the line. What are you looking at as far as production goes from these three running backs as they take on the Colts?
Yep. Can you hear me, Balki?
Yep, you're good.
Perfect. Okay. So if you look at the stats, Collins still had a better game than Buck Allen because Collins had 5 catches for 33 yards. And that gave him more PPR points than Buck Allen. To be honest, some of Buck Allen's touches also came towards the end when they had a considerable amount of lead. And they really didn't need Collins. And I know Collins was not feeling very well earlier in the week. That being said, Collins also got stonewalled twice near the end zone. You know, if you look at that game, and Browns actually have a very good run defense. I'm expecting a bounce back game from Collins. I will definitely roll Collins this week and hope that he gets the volume and some good runs out of it. I think it is a potential bounce back game. And if the game stays close, I don't think Allen is going to out-touch Collins in the game against Indy.
Yeah, I'm hoping you're right. I think you are, and I'm definitely siding on that side of the coin as far as Collins goes, the leagues I own him in. I'm definitely deploying him for sure over Allen. BipLab, this has been awesome picking your brain tonight. So gracious with your time, and I certainly appreciate it in a very busy time for fantasy owners. Going to ask you one last question before I let you go. A sleeper that maybe we have touched on, maybe we have not touched on yet, that might find his way into some of your Week 16 lineups. And then a stud, which I know you said you don't like doing, but if there is a guy out there that you would seriously consider sitting this week, that people have high expectations for, but you don't think he's going to get it done, who would it be? Who are those two players?
Sure. So, I think one straightaway sleeper this week will again be Keelan Cole, although I know a lot of folks might be chasing him on waivers. But a really super deep sleeper that I feel might have a big game again is Demir Bird from Carolina. They are playing a porous defense, and I think it's not Funches, but Bird again goes away with 2-3 touchdowns. I actually picked him up in Scott Fish Bowl, where I'm, now playing for the top 12 spots. So I like Demir Bird this week. As for a stud, you may not like it as a Packer fan, but I think Jordy Nelson will be on my bench, even if Davante Adams is out. Probably I'll even bench Jordan Howard this week against a tough Browns defense. So those are two starts that I don't feel good about this week.
Listen, man, as a Packers fan, I'm already checking out draft stuff for 2018. I've moved on past this season. And I'll tell you what, people have asked me this week, if Adams does miss, does Xavier Rhodes, shadow Jordy Nelson? And I'm just like, does it matter? I don't even if Rhodes doesn't shadow him, I can't in good conscience play Jordy Nelson. So I'm totally with you on that with this week. And I should have given you props at the top of the show for this. But yeah, in the Scott Fish Bowl, it is down to 12 teams playing for the overall title. I mean, like several hundred teams in this, and you are one of them. So best of luck to you there. You already won your division, and you're obviously being very successful in that format. I know you're hoping to inch up that Football Guys Players Championship leaderboard as well. You play a ton of Dynasty. I know that there's a lot on the line in Week 16 there as well. So you have a lot of lines in the water this week. Let's hope you pull in that big fish. Thanks so much for coming on the RotoViz High Stakes Lowdown BipLab. We'll talk again soon, man. This was fun.
Yeah, no worries, Balki. I even have a top 5 Terminator team that's keeping me sleepless. So hopefully I come around.
Just
hopefully I come around in Week 16. But absolutely great chatting with you, Balki. Take care. Have a good night.
Thank you for listening to the High Stakes Lowdown, a RotoViz podcast brought to you by the Fantasy Football Players Championship. And thanks to Grapes for our theme music. Please review the podcast on iTunes under the RotoViz Radio feed. It helps us find new listeners. Contact us via email, rotovizradio@gmail.com. We'd love to hear what you think, and follow us on Twitter at RotoViz Radio. And remember, you can always support the show by subscribing to RotoViz at a 30% discount through the NFL podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast.